He's here. He's there. He's everywhere. Our PM is basically a Where's Waldo picture book. And what's he accomplished and what is he bringing back to Canada? That's the discussion today on our roundtable here on TPL Media. Jim Lang, Paul McCucci. Hey. Well, guys, we have one of the best traveled PMs in the world.
Well, he's okay. He's been so let's start with this. The new plane is called Canforce One. Ooh. It's a converted Airbus A330. And in the military, it's the CC 330 Husky. And it features three class configurations. Now, there's a first class pod for the prime minister, mm-hmm. which includes a private compartment with a dining area, entertainment area, a fold-out bed, a shower, an espresso maker, and it's equipped with self-protection against missile attacks. So it's pretty high tech, and we haven't had anything like that in the Canadian Air Force for a while, and it's brand new. And he likes it because he's been to France, the UK, Washington, D.C., Rome, to Italy, Vatican City, Brussels, Belgium. Oh, it continues. The Hague in the Netherlands, Kyiv, Ukraine, Warsaw, Poland, Berlin, Germany, Riga, Latvia, Mexico, New York City, back to London, back to Washington, D.C., Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt for the signing of the peace accord. Oh, but he's not done there. Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, Singapore, and now currently in Seoul, South Korea, with planned trips coming up in Johannesburg, South Africa, and Punta Cana, Dominican Republic.
I'm sorry. To what was the last one?
Punta Cana, Dominican Republic.
Now he's probably booked one of them Sunwing vacations. Okay, so
so why? You know, the question is, you know, if we break them, can we go from the beginning there for a minute?
Because this is the top of the list.
Sorry, yeah, it's a long list. I was trying to remember them all, and I'm like, actually, I remember France being the first one, right?
So yeah, and in Paris in March to meet with Emmanuel Macron.
Okay, I'm trying to think.
And then he met with Keir Starmer and King Charles later that, like, from there. So from there. A day later.
So he's doing an EU trip to meet Macron and then go over to the UK, I guess, to talk about.
I guess you guys didn't think I'd come back as prime minister, huh?
So then he went to see Trump, and then he went to the inauguration. Well,
hold on one sec, just before you get off that. Because I'm trying to figure out, like, what deals we're doing. So I'm looking at it from kind of what is the benefit other than to say hello, you know, I'm back. Is there, like, are we landing any deals? Are we giving any money away at that point?
Great question. Okay, so after all these months, I'll take the air out of that balloon for us right now.
Thank you.
Because I don't want us thinking that we're going to find any Easter eggs along the way here. He's flown around the world. Diplomacy, fantastic. The scoreboard so far shows one deal with Indonesia, and the rest is all press releases. And still, by the way, we come out of it with a requirement to do 70% of our trade with the U.S., which apparently we cannot stop pissing off.
Where does my elbow go now?
Up, up, up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there you go. He did all of those countries you named.
Yes.
One deal with Indonesia.
I'm trying to think of the deal we did with Indonesia, but okay, I get it.
Yeah, and by the way, that deal was a resource deal that was basically across a wide, it was a wide sweeping agreement.
Okay.
That may or may not ever get executed, but is on the basis of, I believe, canola. So what we get back, I have no idea.
After the election, he met with Trump. Then he was at the inauguration of Pope Leo XIV. Met with Giorgio Meloni, the feisty prime minister of Italy, the German chancellor, the European commissioner, Vladimir Zelensky. And then he flew back to briefly meet with Pope Leo XIV, I guess, one-on-one. I know he's a devout Catholic. Maybe he wanted some divine blessing how to run the economy of the country. Then he was on to the European Commission.
Bless, I don't know. Bless me, Father, for I am stunned. Yeah. I don't know what to do next.
The NATO summit in The Hague, met with Vladimir Zelensky and promised more money for Ukraine. Then he was in Warsaw, and they are an absolute powerhouse in Europe right now, Poland.
Yeah. Yes.
Especially, they have probably spent more money on their armed forces in the last 6 months than any country in Europe right now.
Right.
It's been that good. Back to Berlin to Chancellor Merz. Then he was in Latvia with the prime minister, Evika Selina.
If you want to follow along at home, here's a map you can have a look at.
Yeah, it's kind of extensive, the map we're going to throw up there. And it also includes his meeting with Claudia Sheinbaum, the president of Mexico. So there's the Mexican trip there in the bottom left and all the other trips. And the new Airbus A330, the Canforce One's getting a real workout. We haven't even got to.
It sounds luxurious, by the way. Can we just stop and go back to that wonderful airplane?
With the dining area and the entertainment and the shower and the bed.
When you say entertainment area, I envision him with a gaming chair playing Call of Duty.
No, he's watching the Blue Jays game on the flat screen.
You know what? Then if I was him, I wouldn't.
After
the nap, yeah.
I wouldn't hesitate. I bet they have comfy lounge chairs on that thing. Oh my God. But
the media's on it.
Typically the media would fly in the back of the plane, yeah. But so it would be the prime minister, all the staff and dignitaries from the government, and then the media typically would fly in the very back, the media following him on these trips.
Right. We don't see many interviews from the plane like we see with Trump, where he sticks his head out the door. And,
even Trudeau used to do it.
Yeah. You're not seeing a lot of that.
No, he does. I don't believe our prime minister has a lot of time for the media. He tolerates the media. Mm-hmm. He does it because there's an obligation. But even before he left on the current trip, they were questioning him about the Reagan tariff ads before he got on the plane. And he just turned heel and went up the stairs onto the plane before they even finished their question.
Yeah.
He wanted nothing to do with it.
That is his cone of silence. Yeah.
It's his circle of safety.
Yeah.
It's his safe space.
Yeah. It's the prime minister's safe space.
It's his safe space.
Guys, if he needs to fly around the world to feel safe, far be it from us to get in the way, right?
Yeah. No. And on previous shows, I've been kind of a little bit of he's new. We got to kind of let him work things out and figure out what's happening. And now I'm trying to understand, when you're there, what are you doing? Like, so why are you there? What's you have a budget. You've kind of deferred the budget. It's coming November 4th. You know it's imminent. You got to cut some deals because, if we know something's happening, he probably knows 2 or 3 weeks before at least, right? So usually the way it works in politics, you have a little bit of a heads up for a few weeks before it actually hits you in the ass. And quite frankly, he knows it's happening. So I'm thinking, when this is all happening, he's going to Germany for a reason. He's in Britain. He's figuring that out. He's doing this for a reason. I'm trying to understand now. And that's where I'm kind of getting a little bit.
Well, let me clear it up for you. He's kind of been traveling the world handing out money, Paul.
Yeah.
That's a lot of it. I mean, unless there's something else in the way of deal making that has been going on that we don't know about. Here's a guy that's up against a budget that we don't know anything about.
But it's going to be a belt-tightening budget. That's the only thing we've heard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and how anti-liberal is that? To top off that, he's traveling the world, not getting deals done, spending exorbitant amounts of money. What's he handed out so far?
Well, see, we got some deals here. We have $25 million to Kuala Lumpur, $2 billion to Ukraine, another $2 billion. So $2 billion in military support to Ukraine, and then a $2.3 billion loan to Ukraine for reconstruction, $14 million for joint investment for research and development for biomanufacturing with Canada and the UK, and a $6 billion deal with Australia for an over-the-horizon radar system that is going to be bought for the country.
$10.3 billion
radar system defense, right?
That's defense. Yeah.
We've talked about that on previous shows.
Long range radar system, yeah.
And the Ukraine, quite frankly, is just to support the country. Really, that's
of course.
Where, yeah,
yeah.
But the difference being, and this is kind of what we're noticing as we go through. Trump went to the Ukraine. He cut a deal. He got a deal on funding and restructuring. But he actually has a package for rare minerals.
Yeah, he got a rare earth minerals deal.
He got out of it. And he has
natural gas as well.
Natural gas. Yeah. I was just going to say gas.
Oil.
Oil, gas. And whatever other, minerals and products come from the Ukraine. So he cut a deal, right? He said, if I give you more money, we've given you so much to date. I mean, we didn't do that, right? And so one of the things is, okay, we went there. We spent, what are we up to?
$10.3 billion. What, in Ukraine?
$10 billion total.
$10 plus billion on the trip, yeah.
Yeah, $2 billion right now and another $2 billion. We committed $4 billion into the Ukraine. Didn't cut a deal for anything, quite frankly, to get back.
Guys, I will remind you that our prime minister committed the first amount of money and then they cut him out of the photo. And so he went back and committed more money in the form of a loan so that he could actually get that photo op. Maybe that was just my impression.
Here is a common question being raised in Ottawa by very, very senior political columnists and observers. They don't understand what Mark Carney is planning or thinking. And it keeps coming up. What is his, what's his plan? So usually you get the first 100 days.
Yep.
So that would take you to Labor Day. You're well past 100 days as prime minister. Mm-hmm. That's your mulligan, your first 100 days. And there's a lot of Canadians, a lot of political observers, and a lot of people even who may be a Carney supporter or Liberal supporter going, wait a sec, what's his plan?
Yeah, it's 100 days, except the last guy stepped down and prorogued the government. And we've been waiting for somebody to be in charge here all that time. The first 100 days, if maybe I'm wrong, but if I was Mark Carney, I would have come out of the gate strong, saying, okay, we've got these problems. These are your complaints as a nation. I'm going out with this plan.
Well, why don't the plan is right now is they're planning for election, because all the talk that will not stop is they are so worried about this budget's going to flop that it'll result something you brought up a couple of weeks ago, Paul, that this will result in an election, and so much so that they're preparing for it.
And they even want it because this is their opportunity, of course, to get a majority, right?
That's what they believe.
They believe that. They're a little delusional.
That's speculation right now. But, you know, I kind of come back because, you know, he did last week try to articulate a plan. But he got a lot of criticism because it was all over the place, right? I think it was a graduation speech he did.
At the university.
The university. And, you know, I listened to it, and it was, you know, and again, I always benefit of the doubt, but, you know, whether he wrote it or whoever wrote it for him, it just was from pillar to post, didn't really have a lot of grounding, didn't have a lot of execution, or I'm not sure how much thought was even given to it. It was a lot of buzzwords that ended up in a long kind of 40 minutes.
But more questions than answers, right, Paul?
Yeah, I think a lot of criticism over it. So, you know, I was hoping, you know, when we look back at the $10 billion, and, you know, sometimes you have to see things to get things. I was hoping that as we were giving out the money to Australia and we were giving the money, we would be getting reciprocal deals, right?
Exactly.
So when we went and did a radar system to Australia, Jim and I talked about it on the defense podcast, you know, we would start to produce stuff back home. So right. We could say to Australia, hey, we can do this, we can do that. And we would do like-minded thinking. In Germany, we went to Germany, same thing. You know, we had the discussion with Germany and it was one-sided, right? It was all what we could do for Germany and nothing was coming back to Canada. And they did a soft compact or whatever of what they could work
with
each other on.
Which is a press release. I mean, that's if you go through most of what occurred on this journey, the net result is we still have to do 70% of our trade with the US, and we've blown that up right now with some wild PR, and we've only done one deal. So, I mean, I don't really see, maybe there are deals forthcoming. Maybe these, as you point out, were planting seeds, but you plant the seeds, you really have to have a plan. And if his strategic plan was to replace 70% of this trade that we do with the U.S., there's no indication of it on the basis of him landing in Ottawa now.
To date, he said that last week. He said, we're going to double our exporting to non-U.S. entities or non-U.S. countries. He talked about it. You know, that's when I started going back and looking at the travel, and I'm thinking, okay, strategically, was he doing it then? And it really doesn't appear that he was. It doesn't appear that, honestly, he was seeding something. He was paying people. He was contributing to programs and issues across the world. But there wasn't really a lot of strategic thinking of how it came back.
So 10.3%, $10.3 billion is what percentage of our projected debt?
Oh, but it's a fraction.
So it's easy for him to justify.
So, but gentlemen, here's my question. This is Mark Carney is a Harvard grad, brilliant as he is, brilliant economist, on and on and on. Politics is a whole different game, and it's a whole different world, especially at the global level. And he's only been at it a few months and thrown into a situation with stuff that maybe even a year ago wasn't even thought of on the world stage that he's dealing with on the fly. And sometimes, unfortunately, even the biggest supporter of Carney has to kind of shrug their shoulders and go, well, he's still learning. But as a country, that's tough to take.
You know, it's interesting.
Because we don't have time to learn.
To that point, maybe we're not caught up. Maybe he's not caught up. But you know, when we were talking about this before, Paul started to drill down. Okay, what is the trade that's going on behind our back? A big deal was done with the USA and Australia. It looks like, I mean, Trump was the first meeting, Carney's the second meeting. What deals has Trump already done?
Oh, Trump's been huge. You know, he's his Malaysia trip, Thailand,
Vietnam,
Vietnam, Malaysia. He's done deals for minerals, resources. He's reduced his tariffs on those countries, allowing them back into the U.S. for him to get access to their resources. And so, like, and we as Canadians, you know, we have this big thing. We say, you know, we're resource rich.
Yeah.
Well, so is the world, right? The world has resources, like, you know, and you know, in that part of the world, there's tons of resources, right? Look at China, right?
And no restrictions to get them out.
No restrictions. And rare earth minerals in China, they're the number one leader. That's, you know, one of the reasons Trump's there.
Yeah.
You know, he's, you know, trying to figure out a deal to get soybeans going, to get access to rare earth minerals.
So what do you think happens with that in Carney's world then, Paul? Like, Trump gets there, does a rare earth minerals deal with China that, you know, fills his boots. And suddenly that 70% that we need to be doing with the U.S. in trade diminishes even more. And we're still promising to do business with China as Carney arrives into that meeting as we record this show.
So I'm going to ask you from your corporate experience, Paul, as a president, as a CEO, as a company, someone who runs companies, you know that you have to have a meeting with Mike. And I say, I'm a guy who wants a meeting with Mike. From your standpoint, do you want to be the first to meet with him or the last to meet with him?
Strategically, and in this case, I would have taken the last meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, strategically, I think, I don't know if he had the option of taking the first meeting, but I would have probably taken the last meeting because I would have liked to have seen how that went. So, and I think, honestly, it is strategic that the Chinese president, Xi Jinping, I think he strategically put Canada to the back. So to send a little,
I was going
to
say,
to send a little bit.
That's why I'm asking. So Carney's meeting with the president of China last, not because of Carney's choice, that China dictated that.
Yeah, I think he did. I think he's, you know, it's interesting. And you're looking at the values or the information that's coming out of Trump's meeting, right? So they reduced the tariffs on precursors to fentanyl. Kind of an odd, that one was kind of like a head scratcher. You know, the Chinese promised to do better on not sending chemicals to Canada to produce fentanyl. Okay, that's a little bit of an odd one, but so we'll reduce tariffs.
I still don't get this
into the US.
So we're going to reduce the amount of tariff on the precursors to make fentanyl.
Yeah, it didn't make sense. So okay. It didn't make a lot of sense. They reduced the other tariffs from 57 to 47. Okay, I get that. And then the comment really was, we'll be back in April. We still have more work to do. It looks like we have some access to raw earth minerals, and, you know, they'll take our soybeans.
Right.
Okay, meeting done. Which, I guess, you know, based on the way things have been going with the two, that's probably progress. You know, anything
do
is.
Do you think in that meeting, Trump hears, or Trump sends the message, don't mess with Canada?
Oh, of course. I think every time he says fentanyl, he means Canada.
I think he does. Yeah, as well.
Interesting. You could almost replace the word fentanyl with Canada.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, stop Canada. You know, I think what you're really saying. So I think, quite frankly, a lot of that is value. Is they're sending messaging. It's messaging. And so, quite frankly, he's saying to him in privately as they're shaking hands, you know, no more. You're having your meeting on Friday or Thursday on Canada. You know, you can do some trade, but that's about as far as it goes. North America is mine.
Don't go bananas because that's mine.
Yeah, sure. Before the meeting, he also talked about, I mean, he's going to start testing nuclear weapons again. And Jim, when was the last time?
In 92.
Yeah, 92.
Oh, really?
He started the meeting off. The introduction to the meeting was, the United States has the most nuclear weapons and we're going to start testing again because you're testing. And then let's start the meeting. And then they sat down and started the meeting. So I'm sure, you know, North American footprint is a significant topic on both there. Now, that leaves, you know, our prime minister goes in, you know, it's a little bit of a challenging discussion because, quite frankly, I'm sure they're trying to figure out their position on how much they want to do with Canada, how much they want to piss Trump off, the U.S. We have to be careful. We've kind of done that, you know, prior to going there. Let's, you know, we'll recap where we're at. But, you know, before he gets there, you know, we've already played the Reagan ad. You know, it's
into the World Series.
It's already come out pretty transparent that, you know, Ford and Carney both were kind of part of it. And then, you know, we now have the ambassador yelling F-bombs at our ambassador, Ford asking him to. It's a muddy, it's a little bit like drama.
Yeah, so in the middle of all that drama, he has to come back to Canada and deliver a budget.
Which is
having traveled
not
going
to be well received.
No.
And not going to be easily believed on the revenues front, because anything that he's promising us outside of that budget, the budget includes, you know, forecasts on revenues and things like that, that they're basing it on. I don't think Canadians are going to really see it as credible. Maybe I'm wrong about
Paul,
that.
Paul, you're prime minister and you're looking at...
We wish.
We wish. So you're dealing with the problems of Trump and the USA. And the enormity of China as a country and an economy. What would you just say, I'm just going to ignore them for a bit. I'm going to focus on Korea and Singapore and Germany and Italy and European countries and focus on allies and people I can do business with. And just, would you do that?
Well, yeah, I would do that. But here's the challenge, you know, and this is when you look at it, what do they need from us? Yeah. So what we're getting down to, what as Canadians, what we're starting to realize, you know, we sit here and we say, you know, we're resource rich and we make these bold statements, but the rest of the world is already into it. We're behind now. Like we've fallen behind, you know, we've
restricted ourselves in many ways.
Until we build pipelines and get our resources to who needs them and wants them.
Yeah. We're talking about building roads to get up to go mine, right?
But guys,
yeah.
These deals are already done with other places in the world. Build a pipeline. It's not going anywhere. Start mining operations. There's already a deal in Australia. There's already a deal in Vietnam. How do we now at the late stage get into this game? And I know forever is a long time and we can always get back there. But once you start a market, that's the market. It is,
and quite frankly, it's a shame that we've spent, you know, we traveled a lot, you know, in the lat since the first 100 days. We've been all over the world, haven't done a lot of deals. We could have actually reduced trade barriers and gotten to work in our own country, which is what we should have been done. In Australia, you know, you look at Australia is doing a really good job of taking care of what's happening at home.
Big time.
And then going abroad. So they stopped subsidizing companies. They said many years ago, they said, we're not going to subsidize big companies to come to Australia to do business. So they stopped a lot of that. And they still do a little bit, but quite frankly,
they supported business in their own borders.
Exactly. They do, but they don't, you know, like our auto trade, they don't do a lot of that anymore. Right. They don't take billions of dollars and subsidize industries to get workers because it wasn't working for them, quite frankly. It was failing miserably and they got out of that business. So they took another step and then they started to focus internally on how to find their resources, to mine their resources, to sell them internally, to produce and manufacture internally. Yeah. And then they started stepping outside, right? Mm-hmm. So there was pain. Right. There's pain points always. And of course, parties disagree. But for the most part, it was it's an interesting move. And
Australia seems to have made it over that hump of adjusting. Where, to
meanwhile, in Canada, I'm in Ontario. I couldn't buy wine in BC. You can't buy BC wine made in British Columbia in Ontario.
But that was the, you know, that's the price we paid of staying focused on. We went abroad, gave a bunch of money. We knew we had to take care of internal tariffs, right?
We've been talking about that for decades in Canada, getting rid of internal interprovincial trade barriers. Why is it taking so long?
Yeah, we haven't. And that's a
probably
shame.
Probably in Australia, it was mandated. I mean, that's a simple answer to it.
But we haven't here.
No.
The provinces have a lot of power here by comparison to how it's laid out in Australia. And in fact, if we did disrupt that, I don't know that the provinces would handle it well, to be honest with you. Certainly Quebec would be upset, but Alberta might be happy.
But that's, you know, and I'm not again, not defending what the U.S. is doing right now, because I think it's appalling, you know, what they're doing, given our previous relationship. But we really are at odds on some supply management issues that we have internally in our own country. So if we can't figure out supply management in our own country amongst our own provinces, it's pretty hard to go to another country and say, you know, and so that's it doesn't leave a lot of hope, because we haven't been able to figure that out from province to province.
And the other countries can see our own issues and go, wait a sec, what are you telling me? I can't even go from a province to, like, who are you to tell me?
This leads me to my next question. What do you think Carney looks like on the world stage traveling around? I mean, do people even notice him? He seems to be the guy standing
on a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah.
I'd say about a 6.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. The size of, you know, people look at the size of the country, the GDP, the resources they can get. And I think in this global climate, they're really saying, what can you do for me? And quite frankly, if I have it at home and I don't need it, I don't really, you know, I can, a lot of labor rates in other countries are a lot lower, like where he is now, you know, where he's over in Asia. Quite frankly, we cannot labor-wise compete with the rates that people are paid. So there's nothing production-wise that we're going to sell to them. What would we...
It's hard to show up and it's going to take us 6 years to get there.
Yeah, what would we produce in that?
If they build a natural gas pipeline from Alberta to Churchill, Manitoba, Germany and Poland and all these European countries said, we will buy your liquid natural gas and cut out Russia altogether and starve the Russian economy, which if they don't have money, they don't have money to fight Ukraine.
Yep.
That's and Dan McTagg was on this very channel and said in a year and a half, they could be shipping liquid natural gas to European countries by the shipload, and they want them.
Well, we do this, I think, with a lot of our resources. You know, it shocked me the other day, Paul, you and I were looking at how much we do in actual lumber, in full lumber trade.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not much.
It's not much.
It's smaller, a lot smaller than we think.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, we could do a better job with our soft lumber internally. So again, getting our own costs down. So, you know, as we're talking about labor rates in other parts of the world, we have some resources, soft lumber, right? We could find ways to actually get the cost down so we could start reasonably cost construction again. You know, we talk about affordable home building, but yet, you know, you just can't buy lumber at a reasonable price right now. And that doesn't look like it's going to change. It's not going down. People aren't building. So, you know, one of the things, if you really wanted to do it, you'd find a way to get your own resources to a reasonable price so you could produce things at a normal competitive rate that you could sell to the world. But right now we're not there.
If you have the means to produce it internally, but you're waiting for trade deals to make that possible, it's costing everybody.
But do you need
so much more.
Sorry, but do you need a trade deal to have a reasonable price with softwood lumber for construction in Canada?
No, you can do that yourself.
And, right.
But, so let's get to work, right?
Right.
Like, but you look at
that
you,
one sector, keep it here.
Yes.
But you look at, you know, it's, and this is a way different shift in thinking. But for us, you look at other parts of the world where, for example, where he is right now, they take key initiatives. So they take, you know, whether it be minerals or lumber, and the government steps in and they make sure that industry drives the economy.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of, we were trying to do it with cars. I think, you know, for Ontario, we were trying to do it with cars. You know, we were subsidizing the heck out of it.
Very much so.
Yeah. And we thought that was the driver, probably delusional, because quite frankly, it didn't get the cost base down on anything. It didn't really, it helped provide jobs, but it didn't reduce cost base to export to other places. So I think that one was a little bit of a wild journey. But if in other parts of the country, they get the cost base down so they can actually export it to other countries at a reasonable cost. And quite frankly, we didn't do that. So we haven't delved into it, whether it be soft lumber, whether it be minerals, whether it be anything we're doing, we haven't done it, right?
It seems to be the case, yeah.
Yeah.
And it, Australia, as an example, as their dollar becomes stronger, it's because what they've done inside their own country is raise their GDP independently.
Australia, know? If you think about it as a country.
I hate to keep comparing us to Australians because our kangaroos are much smaller.
We're a similar nation in a lot of ways, Canada and Australia, but they have a smaller population. But despite that, they have been strong about their own TV and movie production, their own music, their own military, their own economy. And whether or not America or China or another country wanted to buy it or not, they're like, we're Aussies, we're Australians, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
And we're going to find a way. And that can-do spirit has been with Australia since their inception. And they've been always very good at that.
It actually creates a patriotism in their country.
Huge.
Yeah, because they're in it together. They're in it for each other. And they're not out there trying to do, you know, things outside their own borders.
Well, and, you know, and so this is, you know, coming back to November 4th for a minute, this is kind of the Achilles heel, I think, of what we're going to see. So we have a budget coming up, right? We've done all this travel, haven't cut a lot of deals. We haven't figured out our resource major projects. We put some major projects up, but quite frankly, they were things that are already occurring. I mean, we did a show on it. Basically, they were just the same things that were happening in the Trudeau era.
So restated.
Now, restated, yeah, and repackaged. And so November 4th comes up. We're going to throw a budget and, you know, whether it's $60 billion in deficits or whether it's $100 billion when you add in military, we don't know because the way they're going to package it. But
it'll be a big number.
It'll be a big number. And so we're going to come back out. But, you know, I think my guess is, I've said that on a previous show, that's going to cause, you know, an election. But whoever gets in, or if it stays the same and, you know, the Liberal government keeps running, at some point they have to come out with a plan of projects and where we're going as a country to produce something. So that's where we're missing the link right now.
Yeah, just to recap on that, to this point, we've created an economy in the last 30 years that is based on real estate bubbles and financing with the promise that we are this great resource of minerals up, and oil and
look
gas.
Look up there. There's lots of oil. There's, you know, look over there. There's lots of gas.
So don't
look over there. There's lots of rare earth minerals.
Right. If we need those, we're going to go right at them.
Yeah, but the rest of the world's going right at them right now, right? So
I know Canada's tried to create their own Silicon Valley in the Markham Richmond Hill area.
Yeah,
their own, and it's a good start. And
but we won't mine for silica, damn it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well,
sorry.
The point is that Canada always seems as a country like, oh, hey, we should do this. We think about it. We talk about it. Then we get it going. And we are at a state as a nation in the world right now where we have to reduce the amount of meetings and create action.
Yeah.
Hey, let's do this. Let's build this road. Let's develop the software. Let's create this industry. Let's get behind it and let's get it going. Not have long, elongated years of thinking and talking and planning.
Oh, no, we have trepidation over everything we do in business and government.
Yeah, and let's contingency plan a little.
Yes,
you know, like,
yes.
And it's going to be on another show we're doing, but as the more you dig into mining, listen, mining's a great industry. It has wonderful impacts in countries all over the world. But, you know, it's highly speculative, quite frankly. 1% of mines that you actually start become successful and do prosper. So quite frankly, you know, hooking our horse up to mining totally is probably something we want to think about.
So we're saying we have all of these rare earth minerals, but until we start to mine for them, actually raise the money, clear the land, testing.
We have potential.
Ah.
We have potential rare earth minerals.
May I throw it out there that by the time you build the roads and start digging the mines and start getting the rocks out, there's a hope that the economy and the world economy will improve to the point that you don't notice it if it doesn't work out.
Yeah, that's if you get, you know, listen, you got to make it through. You got to make it through the rough patch now.
Yes.
So that's the challenge. Like, you know, when you had automotive going and when you had a manufacturing base and when you had all these things going
and everything's going nice and smooth.
Yeah. You can go take a gamble and go up and dig some holes and hope you find, you know, gold. But we're not in that position right now. So
it seems like a lot of our projects revolve around just fixing the problems we're in right now. Housing, you know, healthcare,
education.
Education. A lot of these projects are just things we need to do. They aren't advancing us. They're just bringing us back to zero.
But a lot of those issues are, it's funny, since we started, you know, our network, it's interesting to watch how a lot of these issues are just dissolving. So a lot of the issues, you know, is immigration is working itself through and decreasing, you know, affordable housing is disappearing. The number of housing starts is just, all these things are starting to fold off, you know,
You're saying away. The topics are vaporizing.
They're vaporizing because the climate's changing, right? Yeah. And to Jim's point earlier, you know, because of inaction, things are happening, right? So you have to take steps. Your unemployment goes up. So quite frankly, you have to reduce your immigration. You reduce your immigration, quite frankly, that has impacts on housing. Then it has impacts on it all.
And the interest rate and everything else.
Exactly. Yeah. It all spirals off each other. And so that's why a plan is so integral. And you look at, you know, and again, it's a crazy time because, you know, you look over across the border and at one point a few weeks ago, people were saying, I don't know if they were in your social circle saying it, but as I was moving around, people were saying to me, man, it looks like Trump may have it together.
You know what I mean? Like,
I don't hear that.
No.
People don't like the personality behind it.
Yeah.
But he seems to have this deal-making ability that puts the U.S. in the position he wants, whether all Americans want that. Right now, he's certainly unpopular on so many fronts, tariffs, the way he's behaving at home, his own party is turning. However, the deal-making, he's actually getting people to the table. And I think that's what you're referring to more than anything.
Yeah. And him, you know, him bringing companies to the U.S. and everything, and creating jobs and employment and manufacturing. But, you know, that was a few weeks ago. And now fast forward a few more weeks. This is how fast this environment is moving. Right. You know, the China meeting, you know, there wasn't a lot. He's back in April again. You know, they made a little headway. You know, everyone's kind of hopefully calmed down the rhetoric.
I was going to say, so, I think this meeting was about bringing everybody just to calmer waters.
On the home front, the government is still shut. So that's an interesting one. So, you know, he's leaving China, coming home, he's flying home, he's on the phone and, you know, have we make it up with the Democrats? Right. And they're screaming and everyone's screaming and yelling in the background, his own party. Well, you know, yesterday his own party, the Senate, voted to get rid of tariffs.
Yeah.
Right? Now that's
the one easily.
That's not going to go anywhere, right? Because it's the House is going to just ignore it. So the Senate 50-46, you know, so he's losing, you know, he's starting to lose support in his own party on this. And then he's got the government issue, Jim's point, which I think you got to keep right in the front of the car. Is basically he's got Thanksgiving coming. He's got a government shut and he's running into airport problems.
He can't have that with the U.S. Thanksgiving.
So
the America will come to a standstill.
So think about it. This is a very interesting time because he's got to make some bold moves. And it's very interesting because he can't concede to the Democrats. So he can't give in and just go because then he's, you know, he's lost leverage and his party will. He'll have even further dissension within his own party. He's come out of China and, you know, he's told them to leave us alone and, you know, stop doing all silly things on the fentanyl front. So he's coming home. He's got the government shut. He's got some issues still with China. He's got us. We're not getting along on his border, right?
Not behaving.
We're beating the American team in the World Series.
Yeah we're beating.
Sorry
yeah,
about that.
Yeah, that's rough.
So we're kind of rubbing their nose in with a rookie guys who came out of the
go
farm.
Go Blue Jays.
Yeah, go Blue Jays.
Homer.
Yeah. So you know, exactly. Not a good thing either, right? No. Because the morale of the country right now, you know, it's U.S. is very rah rah rah. So he's coming home. So he's, you know, the interesting part is he's, you know, and he's got all these ICE agents running around with protests all over the country. I don't know if you saw when the World, did you watch? I don't know if when you're watching the World Series, I'm reading the newspaper, you know, between innings and stuff and on my computer.
I was kind of watching the game.
Yeah. Yeah. The number of protests. So as they were doing the World Series.
Simultaneous protests or
something. Well, there were 30. The one night of the first game in LA, there were 30 protests going on throughout the city. Right. So and some of them are very, you know, they're not nonviolent protests, right? They're, you know, throwing rocks and chasing down people. And so he's got all the issues kind of in that whole ICE issue going on.
Well, he comes across as completely and totally absent of his faculties, what he's doing with these ICE agents grabbing people off the street.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is something that for most Americans, they thought they'd never see in their own country.
Yeah. But, you know, so now what do you do? Right. So you're kind of stuck. So you got a government shut. It looks like you're going to lose your airport soon.
I was going to ask you that. Does
our
like...
border close?
I wondered that.
So are we on the cusp of our border?
Also, isn't the border agency also part of the government? So
they're not getting paid.
Well, yeah. So that's a great question. What happens to the border agents? From a tourism standpoint, mid-November is not historically a big tourism time for Canadians going back and forth to the state. But what happens is a lot of Americans come over and see family for U.S. Thanksgiving. Yeah. And there's about 4 or 5 days prior to U.S. Thanksgiving. It's the biggest travel period of the year in America. Planes, trains, and automobiles. That's Candy and Steve Martin. That's U.S. Thanksgiving.
So that's, you know, you have to back up a week from that, Jim.
Yes.
And you have to make sure whatever move you're going to make.
It's done.
His back is kind of at the wall that you got to make a move now. So you have to concede or there's another move. So it's interesting. And it's been all over social media lately. And it's an interesting read when you pick it up. But, you know, there's a lot of people saying that he will allow the borders to be closed. Now, I'm not saying through Thanksgiving, I'm saying now, and there'll be a 7-day period because it'll send a message to us in Canada. It'll bring that issue to a head in the US because if the airports close and everything, they're going to have to come to a resolution
before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. So he's kind of, you know, again, think about his week. Like his week's a hell week. You know, he went over there, had some tough meetings over there, flying back. He's got Thanksgiving looming in the horizon, and he's got to make a decision on what to do to stop it all.
Sorry, I'm laughing. I had this image of the Dodgers losing the World Series and not able to go back to L.A. because there's no border and they're stuck in Canada.
Sitting at the Holiday Inn.
Yeah, hey, welcome to Canada. Yeah,
signing autographs.
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani at Tim's. I can't get back to L.A.
Will you board Ohtani at your house?
No.
We really shouldn't afford a hotel.
He turned us down.
You know, you do raise a good point, though. The president comes back to the U.S. With a lot of problems on his hand.
Unrest.
But then Carney has the same problem when he comes home. He's got a budget to face. He's got the holidays looming with an economy that is trying to adjust desperately with interest rates shifting around. I'm curious to see where we all end up in North America before Christmas.
And if it does happen, so say he pulls a bold move, the border's closed because he can't get the government back, he can't keep the air traffic controllers in play, things kind of go sideways, we're going into a budget in the middle of it with just accepting deficits. Right, it's an interesting concept.
This might be the most anticipated budget this country's had in a long time.
Well, that is one thing Carney has done a good job is he has built suspense around this budget. But the sad thing is he's already saying, okay, I did the budget. It feels like this.
But
to me.
You know what he said to the students? Be prepared to sacrifice. Right. Remember, those were his
austerity
words.
Austerity budget.
Austerity, and you're going to have to sacrifice. And the student's like, why am I sacrificing? They were saying, wait a second.
What am I sacrificing? I can't get a job.
I can't even get a job.
So if this is what the budget is coming in with, if this is the entrance music to the budget, I think he's in some trouble, to be honest.
It's a country. We just had an election. What is the appetite of the average Canadian? All of a sudden, we're into another election before the end of the calendar year.
And who is he running against anyway? I mean,
what has changed? Yeah, exactly. Who is it? Like,
there's no NDP leader, right?
No, all gone.
So it's a crazy time in Canadian politics. So the maybe they actually do the internal polling and they really believe by the roll of this dice, they get a majority. Then they can ram anything they want.
Come on, Green Party. Now's your opportunity.
Well, you have some premiers who are very cozy with the federal government right now.
Big time.
Right.
One in Ontario.
One in Ontario. And if you end up with a majority government federally, then quite frankly, whatever projects, whatever you want to do,
you just push on.
You push on. Now, it would be nice to know what those projects are. I don't think anyone's contesting any projects. We just haven't really.
We want to start something. Anything.
It's kind of funny you say that, Jim. You know, years ago you would kind of defend the project you thought was best for the country. At this point, you're really just saying,
"There's a project."
Yeah.
My neighbor next door is retired, and he's like, "Why don't we build anything anymore?" And that's a question I hear a lot as a country.
Yeah.
Why don't we build anything anymore? We were doing a dance with Olivia Chow and the mayor of Toronto because they actually finished the widening of the Gardner Expressway in downtown a couple months ahead of schedule. And that was a big deal. In the meantime, the Eglinton Light Rapid Transit, the LRT, we have no idea when it's ever going to start.
Cobwebs, no. And it's not because of Halloween. It's literally no one knows when
it's going to be done.
But, you know, and this is the interesting thing, you know, and just to talk about China for a few more minutes, you know,
please,
you look at what China's doing and what they started 50 years ago. And you and I were talking about before the show, the Chinese have a 50-year plan. And, you know, that's basically the pillars of what they do or the premise of what they do. And they follow it structurally. So they build their infrastructure and then they build their programs after they have the infrastructure set up. So they spend years and years and years putting that together and they've done a good job. So, you know, for example, in the military, right? When they build a leisure, you know, ship for vacation cruising or vacations, they build it to accept, aircraft, or they build it to accept large tanks, so they have the ability to convert that ship on a dime if they need it. So Their whole infrastructure is built with a plan. Now, I understand that's, you know, a communist country, but, you know, and they have the ability to actually do that based on their...
And a need. They have a need as well.
I get it. And I understand why they do it. But, you know, without a plan that's at least 10 years for the country, as far as infrastructure-wise, it's pretty hard to direct a country. And if every 4 years, and we're not even looking like we're going to get it 4 years. We're going to get 6 months. So, you know, we blew off how many months waiting for Trudeau to go?
Well, it was months and months. Yes. That was speculating.
So now we're going to, half a year. So another half a year, we're kind of not got, and we're going to go to another election again. It is a little bit painful.
The liberals have left us in outer space. And by the way, this, I don't mean this in any means politically, but we've been in outer space in a bubble, unable to really do anything as a nation for over a year now. Yes. And if you count in the opposition to Trudeau leading up to the election, it's been even longer.
You mentioned China. Let's talk about a democratic country in Asia who's doing amazing things. That's South Korea.
Oh, yeah.
When COVID hit, they were the first country to come up with the idea of drive-through COVID testing.
Yeah.
Just drove through.
Remember?
And we're like, I'm watching this. I'm like, why don't we have that here? Then they came up with it.
Could I get a coffee with that?
Yeah. They have.
Tim's would have been busy day and night.
The people used to make funny in the 80s of the Hyundai Pony. You remember their first cars?
Yeah, now look at Hyundai.
And now they have the offshoot, the Genesis, which is their high-end Hyundai, which is a fantastic luxury vehicle.
That's
luxury
a 50-year plan. Their auto industry
has been amazing.
Is a 50-year plan, and they've stuck to it, and it's working.
Right. But their capital projects that the government got behind were strategic to get them there, right? So if you're going to subsidize industries, you subsidize them to build X because you're going to Y. Like, they had that all figured out.
Shipbuilding. Building cars.
Submarines. We did the submarine, the show we did. And they strategically said, we're going to be great in the following things. We're going to be great shipbuilders, submarine builders, car builders, and that's what we want to do, and we're going to make sure, you know, so we're going to produce metal, aluminum.
Scientists, engineers, physicists.
Exactly. Well, that's your education's directed to create projects and people. Your immigration, you know, I don't know how much they have. I don't think it's big, but whatever you do, whoever you're bringing into the country, they're strategically coming there to enhance the country.
They're targeted
to that field. So they're going to make you better. So you let a bunch of...
That's what Canada did, Paul. When I was a kid,
they
would say, we need this, 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 and this, because we're doing this. This is our project as a nation.
But whether it was the CANDU reactor or it was the Churchill Falls hydroelectric, they had specific needs for specific huge projects that benefited the whole country.
I mean, I don't think we did it perfectly, but we at least put it on a plan, and that was the reason for us making these decisions.
I think a lot of Canadians don't really care who is in charge. They just want something built. And if it's built, that means there's jobs. And jobs, that means there's money into the tax system. And that means there's more money for social services.
How about this?
But I think I think your level of frustration, I think they didn't, you know, it's interesting. Before this last election, I'd say they didn't care. Before COVID, I'd say they didn't care as much. Now coming out of things, I think you have half the population that really cares.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think you have an engaged 50% of Canada right now that's like, okay, we're not comfortable with you not
we're
having
watching you.
Yeah, we're
so average people are bringing it up to you, to like all of us in casual conversation.
Everywhere I go, I'll be sitting having a coffee and someone sits down, haven't seen you for a while, and boom, they start right away on it. It's like the first thing out.
You know, guys, as you talk about Hyundai and Genesis, imagine how proud as a nation they are to have their own car brand so widely accepted around the world.
Yeah.
So it's not just economic. It kind of puts them on the map with a certain...
it's a global calling card.
And it is a nationalized project that is really succeeded.
Hey, Canada Arm. Did we all not puff out our chest?
Yeah.
Oh, the space shuttle with the Canada Arm?
Yeah, good example.
Yeah,
I mean, we were like, we did that. Look at that.
Yeah.
And it's still called that to this day.
So, I mean, I think that there is some... There's more than just the economic... element to it. Once you know that you're good at building space arms for the space shuttle, now you're in the aerospace industry, your nation can thrive in that category, develop in that category, bring immigration in based on expanding in that category.
That's the plan, right? And that's the plan that nations, you know, and we got a, you know, we just wavered off. We thought we were going into a green economy, right? We bought in and said we're going to, and quite frankly, it's taken us down a...
Oh, where were we going to get the rare earth minerals, by the way, to make those batteries?
We're going to have to buy it from somebody else.
Yeah.
I don't know if this was thought through well, guys. Look, thanks for chatting with me about the travels and the fine times of our new prime minister as he heads into the budget.
Like and subscribe.
Yeah, please like, subscribe, and tell a friend about what we're doing here and be part of the conversation at tplmedia.ca. Thanks, guys.
Let's go Blue Jays!